strange and simple rules. Yeah, now I've made me another spinner of strange and gauzy threads, with a long and slender body and a bump upon the head. Oh, hold me like a baby that will not fall asleep. Curl me up inside you and let me hear you through the heat. Long and slender body and the sweetest, softest hands, and we'll blow away forever soon and go on to different lands. And please do not ever look for me, but with me you will stay. And you will hear yourself in song blowing by one day. But now hold me like a baby that fall asleep. Curl me up inside you and let me hear you through the heat.
WRCT Pittsburgh, the last bastion of pulchritude.
You're listening to Nucleotapes on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3. Welcome back to Nucleotapes on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3. I'm your host, Claude Glass. On this show, we look to unpack the musical DNA of a certain artist, On this week, we are looking at the music of Alice Coltrane, who is primarily known as a harpist, pianist, organ player, spiritual figure. Alice Coltrane's career really has spanned decades, genres. She really is one of those rare artists that continued to find new ways to kind of redefine herself and explore new territory. In the 70s, she had a wonderful run of solo releases as a band leader on Impulse, including records that we've listened to on the show before, like Journey in Satchidananda, The Monastic Trio, Huntington Ashram Monastery, collaborating with artists like Pharoah Sanders and McCoy Tyner, and of course her husband, John Coltrane, up until his death in 1967. Over the course of this show, we're going to dig into some of her releases a little bit, talk about her contributions to music, and talk about some of her contributions to spiritual jazz and New Age music. I think what attracts me to Alice Coltrane's music in the first place is just that the arrangements are so lush and dense and wonderfully assembled. And we'll see that on records later on in the show, like World Galaxy and some of her later material as well. But you can definitely hear that on the track that we started our show off with, which is a track from Universal Consciousness, her 1971 release. Yeah, her playing, whether it's on the harp or the piano, is typically just these really densely layered sheets of arpeggios that just kind of wash over you. It's very textural. It's not trying to just overwhelm you or impress you with being overly technical, although sometimes it can approach that territory just as comfortably. But more than anything, I think it is really attempting to tap into this very genuine spiritual element, and you get the sense that she's really playing how she truly feels. She got her start as primarily a pianist in her hometown of Detroit. So to look at some of those roots, 50s Detroit jazz, we are going to start with one of the only other incredibly notable jazz harpists from this period, Dorothy Ashby, who I was first sort of introduced to by one of my friends who plays the harp, Emily, and was pointed in the direction of her wonderful record, Afro Harping, which is just fantastic. We're going to be listening to some earlier stuff. This track's called Moonlight in Vermont. Yeah, Alice Coltrane was very inspired by Dorothy Ashby's playing, even when she was still on the piano, just kind of borrowing from that approach and that sort of textural approach to playing that the harp can do really well, kind of attempting to translate that to the piano. And then, obviously, down the line, translating that very directly to the harp. After that, we're going to move on to a track by Terry Pollard, who is another pianist in the Detroit scene who also played the vibraphone. Alice Coltrane and Terry Pollard collaborated a number of times in this period and played in a live context with a variety of Detroit band leaders, and even had their own sort of duo and trio at this point. Sadly, there's not a ton of that I can find that's been recorded, but there is a solo Terry Pollard record, and we're going to check out a track from that called The More I See You. After that, we are going to end off this first set on Alice Coltrane's early influences with probably the most obvious influence, and that is a song from one of the later releases by John Coltrane. The two eventually met in the mid-60s in a live context. But even before they had formally met, Alice Coltrane said that she would hear his music and just got the sense that there were some incredibly deep similarities between the two of them. And several times in interviews, she would say some version of whenever she would hear his music would just think, you know, I think I would have done that the same way. Every time she heard him play, she got the impression that he was expressing something truly genuine and was trying to play something that encapsulated how he really felt, which I think is a quality that comes through wonderfully in Alice Coltrane's music as well. And I think their sort of musical and spiritual paths just converged at a wonderful time. They were both kind of heading in similar directions, seeking to explore similar territory. They both were sort of looking for the universal truths that ran through religion and did not see themselves as belonging to any specific religion, but both thought of themselves as deeply spiritual beings. And I think both drew a lot of inspiration from the other. And Alice Coltrane eventually replaced McCoy Tyner as the piano player in Coltrane's group. But obviously that was cut short by his passing. And that's going to do it for this first set. Just a quick set on some of the influences of Alice Coltrane. All right, I'll see you back here in a few. Thank you. Hey, you're tuned into WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3. I'm Claude Glass, and you're listening to an episode of Nucleotapes. This one is looking at the music of Alice Coltrane, a wonderful harpist, pianist, organist, composer, and band leader. We just closed that first set off with a track by John Coltrane called Welcome. If you feel like you missed anything on the set list, it's always posted on reptiliansnackrecords.com/nucleotapes and on the Reptilian Snack Records Instagram page. We also have an archive of past episodes and other things like that. Moving right along in our show that deals with the music of Alice Coltrane, we're going to be looking at some contemporaries that contributed to the sort of broader genre of spiritual jazz that Alice Coltrane was kind of working in the late 60s and early 70s as a solo band leader. It's a mixture of jazz with a uniquely religious angle. Everything is kind of imbued with this, obviously, spiritual energy, combining elements of the musical traditions of India and Asia, the specifics of which kind of vary from album to album. But the most famous records probably in this genre would be John Coltrane's A Love Supreme and Pharoah Sanders' Karma. The people kind of in that immediate circle of musicians that played with and collaborated with John Coltrane and Alice Coltrane in the mid-60s and early 70s. But I thought it'd be fun in the second set to explore some other artists that were kind of seeking to combine elements of jazz and elements of religious music. So to start this first set off, we're going to hear a track from a record called Jazz Meets India. Maybe not the greatest title for a record. It certainly is an early example of two palettes intertwining, with traditional Indian instrumentation interacting with, your kind of what you'd traditionally expect to hear in a jazz record. We're going to hear the second track from that, which is called Yad, which features the Diwan Motihar Trio, the Irene Schweizer Trio, Manfred Schuff, and Barney Weiland. After that, we're going to hear a wonderfully minimalist and repetitive guitar track from Sonny Sherrick from his debut 1969 record. We're going to hear the track from that called Blind Willie. And then from there, we're going to hear a track from a collaborative record between Don Cherry and Latif Khan. The track's called Airmail, and the record is called Music Sangam. And then we're going to close this set on spiritual jazz off with a track by McCoy Tyner from the record Extensions, which features the harp playing of Alice Coltrane. Interesting to hear her distinctive tone and work pop up in a collaboration with another artist. Safe to say that I think they both were drawing a bit of influence from each other at this point. But before we get there, we're going to hear another Alice Coltrane record from her second release as a band leader, Huntington Ashram Monastery. We're going to hear the title track from that. Before these solo records came out, a monastic trio and Huntington Ashram Monastery, Alice Coltrane, after John Coltrane's death, went through an extraordinarily tumultuous period of mourning. But coming out of that period of intense inner turmoil, she realized that she still had a lot to say, a lot of music to make, and started with a release of some archival material, some collaborative projects between her and John Coltrane. Cosmic Music, that first release was called. I think it makes this music all the more powerful to think that it's coming out of a period of intense inner turmoil and self-reflection and sort of a refocusing on that musical path, which I think would happen several times in her career in different ways. I guess we'll get to that later in the show. But yeah, that's our set on some contemporaries in that genre of spiritual jazz. All right, I'll see you back in a few. Thank you.
la 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la.
Hey, you're listening to Nucleotapes on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3. I'm your host, Claude Glass. On this show, we are looking at the musical legacy of Alice Coltrane, and we just heard a set of sort of loosely defined spiritual jazz contemporaries in that late 60s, early 70s period, where Alice Coltrane was contributing some wonderful records as a band leader on Impulse. Feel like you missed anything. The set list is always posted on reptiliansnackrecords.com/nucleotapes and the Reptilian Snack Records Instagram page. You can also find an archive of past episodes over there. If you have any ideas for future episodes, questions, comments, concerns, my email is reptiliansnackrecords@gmail.com. Even if you just want to say hey, or give me an album recommendation, local music recommendation, whatever, that's where you can find me. If you're looking for another show to tune into on WRCT, consider tuning into From Ipanema to the World. Brazilian music is arguably the number one export product from Brazil. From Ipanema to the World presents Brazilian music and information to the listeners of WRCT every Friday at 7. Tune in and enjoy listening to an adventurous mix of familiar standards and lesser-known gems from the Brazilian songbook and a broad range of musical styles. Another show you can consider tuning into is called Consolidation. Listen to better music. Consolidation is on Wednesday evenings from 7 to 10. What constitutes better music? I don't know. I guess I'll tune into the show to find out. Better. That's a term with quite a bit of slippage, I would say. What's our starting point? This is hard to evaluate. Anyway, moving right along, we're going to use the second half of this show to look at some modern artists that are inspired in some way by the music of Alice Coltrane and her unique fusion of keyboard, incredibly textural, dense, harp playing, wonderful arrangements, with a deeply genuine, resonant, spiritual element. Over the course of her early career, that 70s period immediately following the death of her husband, John Coltrane, as time went on, she became increasingly less interested with the life in kind of the public eye, and with that entire lifestyle of being a kind of famous musician, and found herself increasingly more interested in passing along some sort of spiritual guidance, and getting into the 80s, really intentionally kind of backed away from that musical spotlight, and preferred to focus on being a spiritual teacher. And eventually, in the 80s and 90s, her musical output was mostly more new age vocal music.
Are you listening in at your house? Are you listening in at your car? If you want to hear good music, you don't have to go far. 88.3 is the magic number. WRCT in the Pittsburgh area. Who say so? I say so. Who is me? Maccabi Selassie.
All right, welcome everybody. Let's jump right in. We haven't done a good old-fashioned press briefing wacky questions segment in a little bit. I checked in on the press briefing that took place on Wednesday this week, and some really pretty wacky stuff is going on. First of all, Fox News's Peter Doocy is still trying to ask these gotchas of Jen Psaki. She's actually increasingly well-prepared to handle them, and here is one where, after some comments Joe Biden made, Peter Doocy is asking whether if a parent doesn't like their kid's curriculum, they should be considered a domestic terrorist. Extremely misleading. I'll explain in a moment.
Does the administration agree that parents upset about their kids' curriculums could be considered domestic terrorists?
Well, let me unravel this a little bit, because the National School Board Association is not a part of the U.S. government. I'd point you to them. What the Department of Justice said in a letter from the Attorney General is that, quote, threats against public servants are not only illegal, they run counter to our nation's core values. That is true. These were threats against public servants, threats against members of the school board. Regardless of the reasoning, threats and violence against public servants is illegal.
That's— Now, you might be wondering, what on earth is Peter Doocy talking about? And what he's talking about is the mobilization of the federal government to some degree on the basis of escalated threats against educators and the insanity that's happening at the school board meetings. The problem is not taking seriously the behavior of parents at school board meetings. That's what we should be doing. The problem is that the school board meetings are getting completely insane. And what this entire thing is in reference to is that last week, the National School Boards Association pressed Biden for federal assistance to review whether violence and threats against public school officials could be considered a form of domestic terrorism and hate crimes. That's all that this is about. And Peter Doocy, of course, has to make it the most melodramatic thing possible. Then Peter Doocy tries to make it a free speech issue. The problem is lunatic parents at the school board meetings. Then Doocy tries to make it a free speech issue. Does Biden support the right to protest? Of course he does.
So does the president support the fundamental right of these parents to protest at school board meetings?
Of course, but he doesn't stand for the fundamental right. I assume you don't either, for people to take a violent action against members of public servants. And that's what the threats are about. And so, no, he doesn't stand for that. No.
Right. It's one of these after another, just continuing to make something not out of nothing, but make something out of what you should be making the opposite out of. Why are all of these parents losing their minds, going crazy at school board meetings, attacking teachers, verbally assaulting, quoting Hitler, as we talked about last week, on and on and on? That's really the question. And then just one other, here's a bonus one. This is a different reporter saying, why hasn't Joe Biden called Mitch McConnell to try to get all of this stuff sorted out, referring to the bills? And the double standard here is notable. Let's listen first.
Why wouldn't the president, given that relationship he has with Mitch McConnell, just call Mitch McConnell and have this conversation with him? Why do this through public
events? The conversation about?
I don't know. They have the relationship. He's the one who said he could bring the two sides together. So wouldn't there be some value in having that conversation?
We know what the risk-free option is here. We know what the clear path forward is here. And I think the president has made no secret about his belief on that.
So I have no problem with Joe. I've said it a million times. When Joe Biden brought Republicans to the White House, and some people on the left were mad, some people on the right were mad. Great. Bring them. Give them an opportunity to weigh in on the COVID stimulus bill. That was back then. They don't want to participate. Let them not participate.